The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by AIB. We see Brave and we're backing it through Brexit.
Well, yesterday marked the first day of Brexit, and while Boris Johnson declared the New Year's break with the EU as an amazing moment for Britain.
This is an amazing moment for this country. We have our freedom in our hands, and it is up to us to make the most of it.
Well, I'm not sure that truckers who may well end up being delayed at ports would agree, but we'll have to wait and see. We're joined by Graham Parker, Vice President of Digital Freight Sales at Containers.com, Martina Lawless, ESRI economist, and David McGee of PwC. You're all very welcome to the programme. Graham, first to you, it was always going to be a quiet start to Brexit with New Year's Day, and we're only into the 2nd of January, but I presume there haven't been any massive upheavals or anything like that?
Absolutely, Richard. So far, it's been pretty quiet. Like you say, January tends to be the quietest month of the year, and a lot of companies had an extra buffer on stock where possible during December. So we saw very little issues so far. There was the first ferry that left Holyhead with 18 trucks did have six incorrect references, the pre-boarding notifications needed by Irish Revenue. But, you know, again, it sounds like a big number, but, you know, it's not really. And it's they're turned away at Holyhead and they were down to more incorrect and not having them.
Yeah, that was interesting because this pre-boarding number, which is part of the new environment that Irish business will have to operate in when trading with the UK. But I thought it was interesting that those trucks were stopped at Holyhead from coming into, let's say, Dublin Port. You would have thought that they might have been stopped at Dublin Port. But in actual fact, is this a case of Holyhead doing some of the work for Dublin Port by saying, if you haven't got the stuff in order, you can't get on the ferry in the first place?
Absolutely. So Irish Revenue have it set up that if you don't have your PBN, your pre-boarding notification, then you can't even get on the ferry in Holyhead. So it exactly is going to alleviate some potential congestion in Dublin Port as the month moves on.
Now, there is a deal, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, but it means, you know, no tariffs in relation to trade with the UK. But customs checks will be a new reality, Graham. How serious a concern might they be in terms of things like delays?
Well, like you say, Richard, I mean, first of all, to have free movement and no duty was a big result on the logistics side. But, you know, like you say, there are customs checks. In effect, it's a new mindset. I mean, for decades, moving cargo between Ireland and the UK was super simple. And now effectively, it's like moving cargo between any country outside of the EU, so even something like China. So it's quite complicated. And for importers and exporters, it's a big mindset shift. And it's, you know, every type of shipment, even down to a parcel with unpost, has to be customs declared in this new way. So I think it's going to take quite a bit of time for people to get used to it. And I think with the year that people had in 2020, you know, they were it was such a challenging year for businesses with COVID that, you know, to be super prepared and be ready with COVID going on was quite difficult. So a lot of importers and exporters are still playing catch up on the documentation and trying to get used to it.
There is an element of the unknown about managing it for the likes of Dublin Port as well, because there will be these inspections. So they have to allocate a certain amount of resources to cover all these declarations and inspections, you know, vets and all of that. That's difficult, particularly in the early stages, isn't it, to judge?
Absolutely. I mean, Dublin Port seems to have done a very good job with increasing facilities and staff numbers and a number of vets that are now operating from the port. But like you say, you know, any shipment that's part of the food supply chain now has to go through this veterinary process. And a simple roll-on, roll-off shipment is now, you know, maybe a 5 or 6 step shipment. And nobody knows really, and we won't know for a few months, I guess, how much more complicated and how many delays that can bring into the supply chain. And I guess if you're an importer, an exporter, are you thinking about importing or exporting outside of the UK for your food produce if it becomes more complicated?
And of course, from a logistical point of view, there will be these new, this colour-coded system, red, orange, green. How's that going to work? Basically, if you're in the red lane, you're more likely to have inspections.
Exactly, Richard. So basically, if you're green, you're good to go. You come off the ferry the way you would have done and you exit the port. If you have an orange routing, some more shipment information required, and if it's red, then it would mean a physical inspection, and there's areas in the port to help make that happen in a timely manner.
And is it very difficult to inspect all this stuff, Graham? For example, like let's say a container comes in as opposed to a roll-on, roll-off truck ferry, a container comes in, there isn't just a container load of one product. There's lots of things in those, isn't there?
Exactly. From, you know, from an Irish customs point of view, I mean, when you think about customs and clearing containers now, people think about the US market and the Asian market and those markets. But, you know, you could have two trucks in Dublin Port, and one could have, you know, a full truckload going to a big department store. But the truck next to it could have what they call less than a truckload. It could have seven different importers' shipments on board. And if just one of those shipments for one of the importers isn't cleared, it affects everybody else on the trailer, and that slows everything down. So it's these types of complexities that everybody has to think about now and try to be more organised. But it's certainly a big challenge that, you know, we've never faced before.
And you did mention that a lot of businesses will have stockpiled ahead of Brexit. So we might not see the same sort of delays and flow in January. It might take a bit longer to kick in.
Yeah, I mean, January is probably the slowest month of the year, but we saw in December a huge stockpiling effort where it was possible. So I think really it'll be late January, early February before we, you know, we see any potential issues. Hopefully we won't see them.
So in other words then, basically from a congestion point of view, if a truck is delayed by even, I don't know, a couple of minutes, there are so many trucks, that would have an effect.
Yeah, if you look at, you know, there's a significant amount of ferry traffic obviously coming from the UK every day. You know, if you take the amount of trucks on each ferry and you take, you know, even just a 45-second delay
per truck,
it, you know, it would cause huge backlog, gridlock throughout Dublin Port and going into the city. So that's what, you know, everybody wants to avoid and is very nervous about.
Well, hopefully we can. Martina Lawless from ESRI, one of the things about trade that, as I understand it, in the trade talks, the UK had signalled that they were going to waive a lot of stuff going into Britain. They were going to waive it through in the early days and early months. Is that going to happen now?
Yes, the UK customs authorities, the HMRC, have said that they are going to sort of unilaterally phase in a lot of these checks that have been agreed. So there'll be some documentation for exporting into the UK market that will be required immediately from today. But there will be other sorts of documentation, particularly in relation to sanitary certificates for food products, some of which will come into being required from April. And it will be the 1st of July before the full set of documentation, the full set of checks are going to be done. So there's more of a phase in for Irish producers exporting to the UK than there is for imports into Ireland, where all of the documentation and sort of checks will be established basically from day one.
And would that work in our favour as well? For example, people purchasing, businesses purchasing or consumers purchasing things in continental Europe and they want to ship them to Ireland across the land bridge. So again, is that a case that they might be waved through and problems there, we won't see them in the first few months, they could be further down the road?
That should also ease up, yes, the congestion from in terms of the land bridge. If there are fewer checks in Calais and Dover for goods going into the UK, it should also sort of speed up the transit for Irish containers coming directly to Ireland, but using the land bridge. And that's been a big concern, that it's not just Irish trade with the UK that's going to be affected by Brexit, but that there could be knock-on effects in terms of delays, even if there's no changes in paperwork requirements, for Irish firms going further into Europe.
Now, David McGee from PwC, this is it's great that we have a deal, no tariffs in relation to exports to the UK and so forth, but it's far from perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I think, Richard, there's a few things that we'd be watching out for. First of all, as we've just heard, this still puts the UK into a third country situation. So you've still got to do all of the paperwork, the documentation. That PBN number you were just talking about is effectively a one number that identifies you've done all of the other paperwork that you're supposed to have done and that you've lodged that in advance. So you still have, whether you're exporting or importing, you still have obligations and requirements, even though you're not subject to a quota or not subject to a tariff. So that's definitely one thing to watch out for. And that's taken effect from the 1st of January.
And isn't that is a real change, this idea of the third country, because basically sending goods to to Liverpool, I don't know, was the same as sending them down the country, essentially, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You could stick product on a truck in Dublin, and whether it was rolling to Leash or Liverpool made no difference. Now, you're regardless of the fact that there's zero tariffs, and it is great. It is great that there's a deal, and it's great that there are no tariffs on goods, but you still have a significant administrative and as we've heard from Graham there, a logistical challenge to get over in terms of just moving this smoothly through the ports.
Now, there are other elements to this deal that we would want to watch out for in the future. So, for example, one of the sticking points was a level playing field. And if the UK deviates from certain standards that are acceptable to the EU now and vice versa, if it deviates away from them, we could see tariffs in the future.
Yeah, and I think this is something that maybe has kind of slipped under the wire a little bit. In the final deal, and this was a sticking point for months now, the EU was very worried about what the UK might do in the future around things like workers' rights, around competition law, about state aid and subsidies, what they might do in taxation or social and environmental protections. And what the EU wants to be cautious on is that the UK doesn't suddenly deviate significantly from EU rules and then give an advantage to the UK. And the reason I'm saying that's a watch out in this deal is the remediation action outlined in the deal is that you can then impose retaliatory tariffs. Right. So it's not that we have a locked and forever, there will be no tariffs. There's a constant watching brief to make sure that everybody stays in line. And the reason I have a question mark over that is, you know, one of the big stated goals of Britain in wanting to leave the EU was to have more control over things like that, to be able to set their own state subsidies, set their own rules around workers' legislation, for example. So I think that would be challenging to keep in sync over the next period.
Martina, just on that point, do you think, obviously, it was important for the British government to retain the ability or flexibility to do those things? Do you think that they will do those? They will make those changes in standards over time?
I think there's going to be an ongoing risk that standards do deviate. I think in some of the elements where that played a big part in the negotiations, such as state aid, the UK has never even reached the allowable levels of state aid under EU rules, and a Conservative government would seem to be pretty unlikely to roll out massive subsidies to individual British businesses. So I think on that, it was much more a point of principle about being in control of their own rules than any immediate decisions that they were going to go in and kind of do something dramatically different from what was already allowed under EU rules.
But I suppose they could change, couldn't they, things around environmental standards and all of that, that would trigger some of the clauses in the deal?
They could, and they now have the freedom to do that. And I think that will be something that is a continual kind of element of tension between the EU and the UK in terms of how things are defined and how standards are set. So really, Brexit, in terms of today's trade deal, is only the beginning of a long, long succession of talks and interactions and discussions between the EU and the UK that's really going to keep going for many years as near trading neighbours.
Just on that point, David McGee, services, this deal, this long protracted set of negotiations were really all about products, but services aren't really in there. Has that all still to be worked out, stuff around banking and the City of London and their access to EU markets?
Yeah, absolutely. And that will be very difficult to get resolved. And partly why early on in this process it was put to one side, and the focus rightly was initially on goods and the free movement of goods. We've already seen over the last 2-3 years financial institutions and other service providers make arrangements to establish or to increase their presence in EU markets, including in Ireland, to try to get around some of that and have a presence on both sides in the UK and in the EU. And we've seen some very big, high profile and new licensing and registrations with the central bank to see that. But all eyes will be on that in 2021 to see what happens through the services sector as the negotiations continue around that area.
So the talking will go on. We'll have to see how it all plays out. Graham Parker of containers.com, thank you very much. Martina Lawless, ESRI economist, and David McGee of PwC, thanks for joining us on the programme.